Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the show. This January 28th special meeting of the Board of Trustees of the Capistrano Unified School District is back in session. To start the open session portion, I've asked Trustee Anna Bryson to lead us in the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
All right, at this time, I'll entertain a motion to adopt the agenda as presented. Motion by Bryson, second by Reardon. Thank you very much. Jane, would you be so kind as to do roll call?
President Alpe.
Present.
Trustee Hatton. Trustee Bryson.
Present.
Trustee Adonisio.
Here.
Trustee Hanisak.
Here.
Trustee Pritchard.
Present.
Trustee Reardon.
Here.
All right, with six board members present, with Vice President Hatton missing, we have a quorum. Item number four, report out from closed session. Agenda item 3A, conference with legal counsel, anticipated litigation. The board gave direction to staff. All right, next to agenda or item number five, board and superintendent comments. Does the superintendent have any comments?
No.
With no comments, any comments from other members of the board? Okay, well, with that, we'll move on to the next item. Next is discussion action agenda items. Item number one, report on plans to develop five new villages and residents on Rancho Mission Viejo. This time, recognize the superintendent, Joe Farley.
As you know, for over the past year, we have been in negotiations with Rancho Mission Viejo about these new residents. And we're prepared tonight to give you an overview of what the project looks like and what kinds of numbers will be generated by the residents of those projects and other data. And that'll be presented by Mr. Tim Holcomb.
Good evening, honorable board members, Superintendent Farley. Thank you for this opportunity to give you an update on the progress that we've been making over this last period of time. There are two components to the update this evening. One is going to be made by representatives from Rancho Mission Viejo, who will give you a quick update on the development plan for the ranch. And with that, I'd like to call forward Mr. Dan Kelly.
Thank you, Tim. Good evening, members of the board. Superintendent, I'm Dan Kelly with Rancho Mission Viejo. And we appreciate the opportunity to take a very few minutes this evening and update you on the status of things at Rancho Mission Viejo. I'll be very brief. I'm going to try and keep this to 5 minutes as instructed. So if I run late, please feel free to let me know. The ranch plan, as it was known in 2004, was approved by the Board of Supervisors in November 2004. We have been patiently waiting ever since for the opportunity to get back in the master plan community business. But that program, which was acted on by the board, really began in 1991 with the environmental analysis that took place. So it's been a long time in coming as we approach opening the first village this summer, known as Sendero, along Ortega Highway at the intersection of Antonio Parkway. It's been a long road, but much has occurred since 2004, and we look forward to the opportunity of having many conversations with the board and with the administration as we begin to implement the project. Very briefly, of the 23,000 acres that is Rancho Mission Viejo, the board approved the allocation of 14,000 homes on that property. Those 14,000 will basically be on about 25% of the acreage remaining. And of those 14,000, 6,000 are what is known as age qualified. You have to be 55 years or older to purchase one of those homes. So on that remaining 6,000 acres, we will be building those homes over quite a period of time. It was originally estimated that it would be a 20 to 25 year effort, and quite frankly, we've burned through about 10 years of it already, and we haven't done anything yet. So it's very difficult to say what the timing will be for the entire project, since it is so dependent upon the status of the market over time. So 14,000 homes, 6,000 age qualified. When you sort of see what's left in that 8,000, we tend to, as a rule of thumb, think of it as sort of Ladera-like in terms of size. And that's an easy and I think somewhat reliable method of measuring what would be needed over time. One of the things that's very different about this plan, in fact different than all the others we've done, is that it's a general plan in the truest sense of the word. There are very gross numbers of dwelling units allocated over the acreage that has been designated for development, and only over time through further entitlement and refinement will actual specific plans emerge that will tell us what exactly will go in those planning areas. So it will be a process that will unfold over time with a considerable amount of planning and design work that will take place over many years. The project also allows for up to 5 million square feet of non-residential construction. I mentioned the open space. It will be contained in a reserve, which when it's completed will be the largest of its kind in Southern California. The very first planning area is known as Sendero. It's approximately 1,200 homes. It's already in its, if you will, its second design. We were prepared to begin that project in 2006 when we decided it might be wise to wait a little while. That turned out to be a great decision. But since then, it has been redesigned to accommodate and recognize the changes that have occurred in the marketplace and consumer demands. It has about a 90,000 square foot commercial center. As I mentioned, it's well underway. The mass grading has been completed for a while. Finished lots exist. And today, construction is underway on the recreational facilities that will be contained within it. The next planning area is Planning Area 2. It is very much in the early stages of design, trying to understand the opportunities and constraints, but it's coming along very quickly. And as one who watches the cycle of land development, hopefully we're at one of those points where we are beginning to see an increase in increase and a renewed interest in the market that will put us in a position of being able to move from Planning Area 1 into Planning Area 2 quite quickly. I'll wrap up by saying, as we've discussed with staff many times, we believe without qualification on the importance of having school facilities located within communities in a timely fashion. They're an integral part of the community and essential to its success. And by success, I mean as a place to live. It really only functions as a community if all of those key components are in place. This year marks the 50th year Rancho Mission Viejo has been involved in the community development business. And over those years, we've been involved with many different districts and many different administrations. And we've always managed to find a pathway to success. It's a partnership. In essence, we're sort of married here one way or another, because the district, of course, has the role of educating the students that we hope we're going to be able to provide in those communities. It's a partnership that really can't be done separately. Much effort has gone into the current documents that have been before the board. We believe it's a foundation upon which we can move forward and develop a more comprehensive agreement. We're anxious to do that. And we're excited as well to begin discussions with the district about planning for the first facility within the community that would be in the second planning area. It's absolutely true to say that while we sit here today, if you looked at Planning Area 2, it is the traditional rolling hills of Rancho Mission Viejo. But in terms of being prepared to have facilities in the right place at the right time, we believe it's time to get started on that planning and design. So thank you for your attention. If you have questions, we'd be happy to try and answer them, and we appreciate your attention.
Any questions from the board at this time? Thank you very much.
In a moment, I will slip into talking about what we've been doing in talking with the ranch about mitigation. I would like to make one other point to Mr. Kelly's slide. You see the diagram which has the outline in yellow of the entire ranch property. You see each one of the areas in the light blue with the number in them. And the funniest thing when you look at this the first time is it doesn't have all the right numbers in it. And so one of the things to know is that as part of the negotiation with the county and the EIR, there were certain planning areas that were omitted from the final approved plan. So there is no 6, there is no 7, and there is no 9 from the original plan. So as you look and see planning areas 1 through 5, and then it jumps to number 8, this is the reason why. With that, I'd like to give you a little bit of background information and for our members in the audience on why it is that we have these types of discussions. As Mr. Kelly mentioned, it's a partnership, and the state of California has created a process for school mitigation that requires a partnership between school districts and the developers that are developing within their boundaries. As Mr. Kelly mentioned, the County Board of Supervisors included in the Environmental Impact Report a provision that requires Rancho Mission Viejo to ensure that adequate school facilities and services will be available at the time of our need. It's also, I thought, important to point out that this is consistent with your board policy, Board Policy 7151. The reason that we do mitigation agreements is because there are laws on the books here in California that talk about how we would fund school construction, and then there is also this development agreement that Rancho Mission Viejo has with the county. So the two of those have specific requirements, and in order to address those, the best way to do so is through a discussion with the developer, Rancho Mission Viejo Company, in this place. In fact, the district has done this many times in the past, most recently on the Ladera Ranch project. A negotiation was entered into, and eventually the district reached an agreement and signed an agreement with Rancho Mission Viejo Company to how those schools would be funded that were built in Ladera Ranch. All of this, as Mr. Kelly mentioned, of the last 10 years of them getting ready for this, they could see that the market was turning for home building, that they were ready to go forward, and so early last year they approached the district to request to meet to start these negotiations, and prior to the need for building permits. And as you saw on the slide before, they're getting ready. Mass grading is done. As Mr. Kelly mentioned, they will be ready to pull building permits to build homes in the near future. So we really are working to a schedule to get this done soon. The spring and summer of last year, we worked on quality standards. And I'll talk more about that in a moment. Then the next things we did in the fall and winter was we worked on quantity, which is really about capacity. How many students are we going to need seats for, and how many schools will we need to build for them, and the cost, and how we get that cost funded. And on Friday of last week, Rancho Mission Viejo provided to the district a proposal from them of what they believe they would like to do with regard to an agreement. And so that's how we get to where we are. So there are really three basic components to the issue of mitigation. I mentioned them just a moment ago. Quantity, how many new seats do we need? Quality, what types of facilities do we need and want? And then cost, how much is it going to cost to provide this quantity at that quality? So algebraically, it's cost equals quantity times quality. So the key in that is that one of these components must be variable. And I laid it all out there. As you can see, of course, if quantity is fixed, we're going to seat every student. And quality is fixed, it's going to be this quality of school, then the cost has to be variable. The cost goes up to whatever is necessary to seat all of those students in that quality of seat. If quantity is fixed and cost is fixed, then quality is variable, and quality is fixed, then cost is fixed, then quantity is variable. It's really the key of figuring out which ones of these things can we play with, which ones are okay for us to negotiate on. So the major elements of each of those is, for quantity, we're really talking about new students, and we're talking about existing capacity. Do we have capacity at our existing schools to house the new students, and therefore would not need to include them in the count? The next is quality. What are our standards and expectations of what a school looks like and what kind of components it has? What type of qualities does it have? And then the other issue with regard to quality is joint use. The state has encouraged local agencies, including school districts, to try to find opportunities to find efficiencies by jointly sharing facilities with each other. And the district has a number of joint use agreements. So that's another way that quality can be addressed. And then last, cost is revenues and costs. So to the issue of quantity, student generation rates is really the issue of looking at the same house that's been built before. How many students does that type of house typically have in it that are in our schools? Knowing that if we build the same house, or presuming that if we build the same house in the future, it will have the same number of students coming from it. So the student generation rate for Planning Area 1, we have talked about basing that on Ladera because it is the like product that is most recent and associated to it. With regard to the remaining planning areas, for the purposes of some of our studies, we looked at a document called the School Facilities Needs Analysis from 2010, which projected some of those. But really the point is we have to then look at the next time we build at the thing we just built. And that is now the new like product. So this is a process that will continue to go on over time and be revised. The current forecast, based on those two things, says that this development overall, over all of the planning areas, would generate 4,561 K-12 students. You see that 2,724 are in grades K through 5, 991 are in grades 6 through 8, and 846 are in 9 through 12. So therefore, as we talk about how many students we have, now the issue is what type of capacity do we have? We looked at the district's existing enrollment, and you see those figures here. 2008 facilities capacity at the elementary, middle, and high school level. The 2011-12 student enrollments. By the way, the reason why that's a year ago is because the way the state counting of students goes, it actually takes a while to get those certified, so it's easier to use the prior year's numbers. But the point of this is that you see that we don't have capacity across the district at our current schools. In fact, we have more students than we have capacity at the current time. On the next portion down below, you see that with regard to the square footages, the amount of square footage of each of the different types of schools are there, and then we compared them to the California Department of Education's standard square footage per student. So on that basis, if we have this many square feet and the state says we ought to plan this much square footage per student, then where are we at there? Well, that tells us that while we're not as bad a shape with regard to K-5 students, we still don't have capacity. We're still under on our square footage of permanent facility. This is permanent facilities, not portables, and not overcrowding, but permanent space.
Mr. Holcomb, could you go back to the previous slide?
And sure.
I think it's important for you to describe and discuss why we have we don't have capacity. And by that I mean explain the impact of portables and relocatables, because I don't think residents could compute why we wouldn't be able to house 6,000 kids, for example, and the definitions of those two.
Sure. With regard to the capacity at the district, the state has standards that they load at. And the reason that they have that is because we have special needs classes that will be very small. You may have a classroom of 15 students in a special day class, while you have a larger size classroom in another program. Band classes. are large classrooms. So for that purpose, depending upon the particular programs at a school, they can be very different from school to school to school because of the way that the programs apply to the students. For that basis, just to get the broad brush sense of it, the state looks at a calculation at the K-5 level of 25 students per classroom and looks at the secondary level at a square footage of 27 students per classroom. There are also these square footage numbers. On that basis, if the district has programs that, in essence, are more have more students in them, whether or not it is a traditional classroom that has 38 students in it or 32 or whatever, or you have band classrooms or those types of things, that really is how you start to figure out the issue of having a shortage of capacity. So you look at it overall, and we have to have, and one of the things that we're looking to try to find more of is where are these places that we have so many students in such little square footage, and why is that? Is it because we have a program that's very efficient? We have a large performing arts program, you know, or something like that that makes very efficient use of space for the number of students in it, and how does that apply to whether or not we have enough square footage overall? So that's how you can have kids in classrooms right now. Some of them are, you might say, in overcrowded classrooms. Some of them are in very efficient classrooms. But if you look overall, we should have more available classrooms. And our belief is that generally we're loading our classrooms very heavily in comparison with state standards in order to accommodate every student in smaller square footage. I'm sorry, I was rather wordy, Dr. Farley.
Mr. Holcomb, could I ask a quick question?
No, of course.
Yeah, when were the state standards last revised?
That's an excellent question. In 1998, in preparation for SB 50, which was the new school facility program, the state adopted a new set of standards. And in those new standards, they largely addressed issues of class size reduction, which you may recall was a significant program in the state at the time. They also addressed the acreages of school sites somewhat. They didn't do much with regard to classroom loading itself. The model of 25 to 1 and 27 to 1 has been a standard for quite some time. Actually, most of the standards before that date back to 1966 for school programs. Any questions? So now that we know that we have students that we will need to find a new home for, we don't have the existing capacity, we need to talk about what are the district standards for, how do we house them. And to meet the needs of those students, the options are a K-5 model, a K-8 model, a 6-8 model, and a 9-12 model. These are the models that are used here in Capistrano. Other districts have 7-8 as a model, different than we do here. In fact, it makes for the state tends toward a 7-8 model, which makes all of our calculations funny because we have to take all of the 6th graders and all of that and move them over. But these are the models that the district uses, so those are the models that we've applied in all of this. Therefore, the best fit of those models to the needs, if we just take and do subtraction and figure out, we have 2,700 K-5 students and so on, a good solution to this is to build two new 1,200-student K-8 schools, one new 750-student K-5 school, and you can see that we have insufficient 9-12 students to fit a current model. We only have about a third of a comprehensive high school in high school students. So if student generation follows out the way we projected it would, which we'll have to keep checking, this is what we think generally would be the needed new schools for the district. One of the things that we talked about is that as we look at capacity, the interesting thing is that the district has some capacity right now at some of the schools that are relatively close to this area. So some of the more crowded schools are further away, some of the less crowded schools are closer, and there is an option there to reduce the costs of construction and to provide for a different experience for parents by not building portable classrooms and adding portable classrooms early on in the program, but saving that money, having those students attend some of the existing schools until the first new school is built, then allowing that school to be a little large as we go forward. So that potentially saves a lot of money. One of the things that we talked about is what the expectations of parents were, and one of the things that the folks from Rancho Mission Viejo said is that many times the people that move into these communities have a bit of a pioneering spirit. You know, we're the first in. And so the idea that we'd rather wait for our permanent school to come and be able to spend the money on that permanent school and go to another school and maybe travel a little bit for a while in order to get a better quality school. And so that traveling part was something we talked about, and Rancho Mission Viejo agreed that they would pay the transportation for those students when it was necessary. So one of the things that we have to keep working on is the issue of the standard of how far it is, that where the capacity exactly is, this is something we would have to plan for, where exactly it is, where the students would go, how far is that, an appropriate distance for a parent to drive their student, or is that something that we need to provide transportation for. But in concept, it seems to be a better, more cost-effective approach to pay for that transportation than to put portable classrooms down as the very first interim approach. That's one of the things we've talked about at this point. And then as you see the last bullet there, the new schools, so as each new school is built in this development, it would have the ability to be overloaded. So a 1,200 student K-8 model would get an additional 400 students in portables while you wait for the next K-8 school to be built, and then it would do the same type of thing. And then eventually those would all go away to go back to the 1,200 students. So the plan really will be based on the actual student generation. The plan for housing the 9-12, then the issue is if we don't have enough for a comprehensive high school out of just this development, what are our options? One that we've talked about is the idea of creating a new model for a small high school. Those are all discussions that we would want to have with you as to is it a good idea? If it is, what type of a school would it be, et cetera. But if there is something in that neighborhood of the 800, a little smaller, a little larger, that may be an option for the district to consider. Another would be to plan for a comprehensive high school in the future when the funding exists for it, so that we take this third of it and we take some of our existing students that are at our other high schools where we don't have the capacity and we put those there, but that's going to require funding from the district for those other students. And then the other option would be to expand one of our existing high schools. And in fact, when you see that drawing with the little areas on it, you'll see that there's this little bit of planning area 2 that sits right next to Tesoro High School. So that's an option of a place to put some sort of high school facilities, whether a small school of its own or in addition to Tesoro, et cetera. Okay, so now that we've talked about quantities and what we would do, the issue now is the quality. And there's a couple of different things that factor into that. One is CDE establishes certain standards for school sites, and they approve those, and we have to comply with certain state rules or obtain waivers. So there are some things they will waive, some things they won't, but there is legal requirements with regard to some of these standards. Building area per student for CDE standards, you see those listed there. Those are not legal requirements. Those are state recommendations. So again, looking much as with the 27-1 for secondary, 25-1 for primary, as to the number of students per classroom, this also says when you factor in administrative space and multipurpose and libraries and all those things, how big does a school need to be? multiply a K5 times 59, or K6, multiply a 7-8 by 80 square feet, multiply a senior high by 92. Then they also have standards for the site sizes, and they recommend 13.1 acres for 750 student K6, 23 for 1200 K7-8, and 52.7 for a high school. There are other CDE standards, for example, the standard classroom at 960 square feet and the kindergarten at 1,350 square feet. These are standards that the state will check on the drawings. They will look and count classrooms, and they will look at square footages of classrooms to make sure that they are to their standards. And if they're not to their standards, again, in some cases they will provide for waivers, but as a general rule, these are the standards that the state applies for those. Once we've gotten all the legal standards, we get to our standards. And what we've found is that we don't have an extensive body of standards. We look at past practice, and we can gain some knowledge from that, but there are not board-adopted standards. There are not published standards for our schools. So we would recommend that those are some good places to be looking at in the future as to what the district standards are. Then there are other standards that are legal standards that have to be addressed. The Americans with Disabilities Act, the Field Act, which is structural and seismic, the state architect, Title IX, which is a federal requirement for like facilities in athletics for boys and girls, California Environmental Quality Act, traffic, etc. As I mentioned a little bit before, the state has strongly encouraged local governments, including school districts, to use our taxpayer money as efficiently as possible by trying to plan for joint use that works for both parties. And you see the education code references there. They encourage these things, and the real point to joint use is finding those things that really work for both parties. A joint use agreement that provides for the school functions when the school needs the functions and community functions can be more efficient, but it's all in the details of the agreements, whether it's with a city or library, district, etc. And you see that the district has some with some cities. I didn't list them all. You know many of them, I'm sure. The city of Mission Viejo is an example of a city. We also have them with the other cities. Ladera Ranch, also their Master Homeowners Association, there is a joint use agreement with, as well as the Santa Margarita Homeowners Association. Those two are listed there. There are some potential opportunities for joint use with respect to the types of schools that we've been looking at the K-5 level. It appears that there are some efficiencies in fields and hard courts at the K-5 level that would allow that 13-acre school to have 3 acres of joint use and 10 acres of more or less exclusive school use. At the K-8 level, we've looked at it and said there's probably 5 acres that could be jointly used out of that. And one of the things that we've talked, a couple of the things that we've talked about are things like even a gymnasium space, because multi-purpose rooms, for example, I happen to know the one at Newhart from a project earlier this year fairly well, and how difficult it can be to put on a performance at a school like that in those types of spaces. Well, one of the options that we talked about is community joint use of a gymnasium, where now you can get the entire school body in for one assembly instead of multiple assemblies during a day. And having worked with many principals over the years, I know that that can be a significant issue. And Rancho Mission Viejo, as they have looked at the needs of their, or the desires of their potential home buyers, sees that the idea of a gym that they would contribute to may be a good joint use idea for us to provide extra for our schools. Libraries, of course, the issue with the county library system and meeting rooms, all those are potential ideas. So now we've talked about the quantities, we've talked about the quality, those two parts of the equation. Then we get to the equal sign, and that's about funding and cost. So this is a good place to go over what California says with regard to funding. The governing law, I've listed there for you. Basically, what it says is that schools, one way for school districts to meet the need to house new students that are created by development is to assess a fee called a level one fee. It requires the adoption of a justification study, and currently the state's statutory amount for that is $3.20 per square foot. The same statute also provides that for senior and to the age-qualified moniker, I completely agree with that idea as well. The state in statute still calls it senior housing, but for those of us who have a lot of white hair and are getting to those places, you know, age-qualified sounds so much better than senior. The state calls it senior, and they allow 51 cents per square foot because you're not allowed to have children, therefore you're not going to have the same level of impact. And also the same level for commercial. The district is currently doing its study for the level one fees. I know Mr. Hampton has been working on that, and you'll be continuing to get updates on that. That does relate to the work that we're doing with Rancho Mission Viejo Company. The other two options that the state has in law are what's called level two and level three fees, or alternative fees. They require what's called a school facility needs analysis. You see that in 2009, the district prepared a school facilities needs analysis, and in fact, the district had prepared them in prior years and had collected level two fees. State law requires districts who want to collect level two fees to meet two of four standards, and those are listed there. The first is substantial enrollment multi-track year-round calendar, which is not the case in our district. You have to have had at least one GO bond within 4 years with at least 50% plus one. That's a no vote, so having to have at least 55 with new Prop 39 and the other is a 66 and a third. So we don't have that either. The next is capital outlay obligations equal to 15% of bonding capacity. In the past, the district did meet that qualification, but by the time 2009 rolled around, the district no longer had that level of indebtedness. It's less than that. So from that side, it's good. The district had less indebtedness. From this side of it, it does mean that the district no longer qualifies to levy level two fees as long as it doesn't have that level of indebtedness. And then the last one is at least 20% of its teaching stations are in relocatable classrooms, and the district has significantly in excess of that. So the district does meet that criteria. I'm sorry, let me go back. I skipped level three. So level two is there, and it's not an option now. It would only be an option if the district had a capital outlay obligation or a GO bond. Multi-track, I know, is not on the options. And the relocatables, I expect, will be more than 20% for some time. So those are the options with regard to level two. Level three is the state's emergency plan for what happens if the state runs out of money for its share. The state typically provides a grant to districts per student for each new student, which is, in the state's mind, intended to be half of the cost of building that seat, the building for that student, and they pay for half of the site acquisition cost, the cost of buying the land. If there's no state money to meet those two halves, then the state said you can levy a level three fee on the developer, which in essence provides for the building of an entire school on the fee basis with no state money. The state suspended that option, I think it was last year, maybe the year before.
Last year.
And so the state has suspended that option to districts at this point, and the state did this actually in anticipation of the fact that it was also running out of money at the time. So this is not an option for us, and I won't get into any of the politics the state legislature got into in it, but you can imagine it has everything to do with the economy and what we're building and not building and et cetera, et cetera. So that's really what level three is about. In code, it's there, but it's been suspended by the legislature. So this is the last slide of the presentation, which is really about, well, where are we with this? So as Mr. Kelly mentioned, looking at the needs, the first need and the most likely scenario would be to build a K-8 school in Planning Area 2. Planning Area 1 is relatively small. We can accommodate students. We can continue to accommodate a little bit of Planning Area 2, but we'll start getting a lot of students by the time we start getting deep into Planning Area 2. So we need to start planning that school. And as you know, it can take 3 years, that time, to get the school built. So we're looking at that option, and we'd like to talk with you about getting more firm in the idea of what the board's request is in that regard. These are the statistics for that. A K-8 school would be about 80,000 square feet for 1,200 students. It would cost around $31 million to build an adequate school for that K-8 student body. The land we've talked about at 14 acres that are school exclusive and 5 joint use acres that the district doesn't purchase. And this is a key difference in that in the past what has happened is the district has bought the acres and then other people have joint used it, have used our acres. And the real issue is who's doing the most using. And one of the issues is a lot of the joint use ends up being the other people using our things more than we're using our things. And so therefore it may make more sense to have them build it with their money, whether it's the library district or whomever, and us go over right next door to the school through a fence and use the county's library instead of us having the library and having the county come into our school, security issues, et cetera, for ours. So that's the concept that we've talked about. We'd like you to consider that and tell us some more about your ideas with regard to that. The land cost to do that, then the advantage is that reduces the district's land cost to $21 million. So the total cost we're projecting for a new K-8 school in Planning Area 2 is $52 million. That addresses the K-8 students in those initial planning areas. We talked about high school. With regard to the high school, what we've been talking about, in order to allow as much flexibility as possible to those various options with high school, including the idea of an option to build a comprehensive high school with all of the things that go with it, is to provide for an allowance now where the district would collect an allowance for that, and it factors out to about $10 million to bank for those high school students, house them in current schools, and we know that they're crowded, so we're looking really at the issues of how do we best work with you to manage that. Some of the schools right now, because they're new, San Juan Hills High School, haven't reached their full enrollment, so we're looking at the projections. Maybe this will work so that over these couple of years as they start to go up, we can use those seats on an interim basis. So those are some of the options that allow the district to have the option to postpone that decision to make that most effectively. Because if we started now building it, then we won't have a comprehensive high school. So we're definitely trying to leave that option open for the district for the future. And then with regard to the remaining K-8 students, we would need to continue to negotiate with Rancho Mission Viejo Company, continue to address student generation rates and the types of schools that we would build for those future areas. And you may even have seen on the map that Planning Area 8 is just a circle. It's an area where they're doing an environmental study with regard to a particular animal. I don't remember which one. So they don't even know exactly what acres they get to build on in that one yet. So this is all about planning for a very, very long-term project. And that concludes the presentation. Do you have questions?
Thank you, Tim. Do we have any cards on this subject? No blue cards on this. All right. Comments, questions, or answers from that matter from trustees? Jim?
Let's talk a little bit about the calendar. There's specific plans. There's grading underway. Can we talk about the very near term? In particular, we've got a community that seems to be going up at Ortega and Antonio, and it's going to be perhaps 3 years before we do anything about facilities. So very near-term mitigation problem. Where are these kids going? What sort of planning is underway for that?
That's an excellent question. One of the things that we had looked at, and I touched on this a little bit, is the idea that at the neighborhood schools that are most adjacent to this area, right now, because of the way that demographics have worked, the aging of the population, some of those schools have been in decline in recent periods, and boundaries haven't been adjusted so that the capacity of the school is actually more than the current enrollment at that school. So district-wide, we don't have capacity, but at an adjacent school, because of demographic changes and because we haven't moved attendance boundaries with all of the difficulties that that entails, we have some capacity. We have some classrooms that we could use at those schools. So the intent is, instead of building a portable school or adding portables at one of those schools, since we have classrooms that we could use, to find that space where it exists. Now, that may mean that the first number of students might attend Ambule Elementary School, but at some point that fills up. So we really need to project this out over the long term as to the next school with capacity. So how much exactly more do we want to plan for Ambule? How long does that last us into the construction program at the rate that the builders are building? And then what is the next school? When is that student going to show up? And how far is that to travel? How, you know, what does its current school population look like, et cetera? Does that answer your question?
And a follow-up to that, though, I mean, the two adjacent schools are Ambule and Oso Grande. Both of those would require transportation. Neither one of those is a walk-to-school proposition for elementary student.
Yes, the Harold Ambule School is, of course, across the Ortega Highway from the planning area, and Planning Area 2 is across Oso from Planning Area 1. So Planning Area 1 will never be, you know, I have two daughters, will never be a school, a community where I would locate with student daughters that I wanted to walk to school, because Planning Area 1 is that small, and the geography is such that even though Ladera Ranch is up on the top of the hill from there, that's not walking distance either. So just because of the topography of it, Planning Area 1 will never situate itself to be a walking distance school. Ambule is a relatively close school to it. Oso Grande, not quite so, a bit more difficult to travel to. So those are all the issues that we're going to be, we would be looking at with regard to that plan, and when does transportation start to become an issue.
Ellen?
Thank you. You touched briefly on the capacity of the local high schools, and of course that would include San Juan Hills High School. Currently, La Plata, coming from San Clemente, has not punched through yet, but we are expecting that to occur. Would you know the timing of that? Isn't that imminent at some point? And how many students then would be coming up from San Clemente into San Juan Hills? Would you have any idea?
Yes, I don't know the exact data on those. There may be some folks in the room that I'll look around to see. I do know that the county recently approved the extension of La Plata so that it is now more imminent that it will be going through. There is also, as I understand, I haven't looked in detail at this document, a plan that has already been discussed by the district with regard to adjusting attendance boundaries for San Clemente High School and San Juan High School, such that students who are now attending San Clemente High School would be able to attend San Juan Hills High School. All of those are parts of the projections that we need to factor in with regard to the amount of capacity that will be at San Juan Hills High School and also, of course, at San Clemente High School.
Tim, just to be clear, there is no plan with respect to what Talega is going to do after La Plata goes through. So that's still up in the air.
Thank you for clarifying. I had bad information.
So, any other questions? Joe, are you looking for, is this an info report, or are we looking for directions? Okay.
I'm sorry,
I didn't see the light.
Yeah, sorry.
Go for it.
With regard to the high school sites, you mentioned that there is space adjacent to Tesoro High School, potentially for expansion of
that
school.
That's correct.
Right? And I'm sort of familiar with the area around San Juan Hills High School, but there doesn't appear to be any immediately adjacent space to expand that school.
That's correct.
Is that right?
There is some developable land, but it is already under planning adjacent to the school. So, and it's also, as you know, landlocked.
Right.
So there is not much opportunity to do that. Real quickly, if I could expand on what you mentioned, the adjacent acreage to Tesoro is about 20 acres. It's currently zoned for multifamily or a cemetery, and it could be used as a school site. We don't fall under the same zoning requirements, but it's there, and we have talked. The ranch has expressed interest in that as a potential school site. Interestingly, 20 acres is just about the CDE amount of acres for the 850 high school students that we have in our plan. So we've definitely talked about that as a significant possibility as an option. We've also left open in all of this the option that it could be some other 20 acres within one of the other planning areas. And the other thing that I've asked them to do is to give us an option with regard to the comprehensive high school. We would need 52 acres, an option in their thinking for later planning areas of where would we put a comprehensive high school site of 52 acres or 50-ish acres.
If you could comment, are you familiar with the situation at San Clemente?
With San Clemente High School?
Yeah, the situation with regard to the property around San Clemente. I understand there are two school sites there.
No, I'm generally familiar with the amount of commercial property that's immediately around it. I don't see any particular expansion areas. I haven't looked. But of course, the other interesting thing with San Clemente High School is the district's repurposing of Ole Hansen Elementary School up the bluff, which is not. It's contiguous, but there's a bluff between the two. So how that all works is something the district can look at in the future as well.
Anna?
Will we see as we go forward where other alternate routes will be built contiguous to or entering and exiting these various communities, starting with Plan 1 and Plan 2? How long do you think it will be before we will understand the road traffic situations there?
That's an excellent question. There are some areas of that Rancho Mission Viejo can address with some certainty, I'm sure, and we could ask them up. There are some areas of that are significant that they won't be able to address with much certainty, and one of those is the extension of the 241 toll road. The TCA is actively planning to extend it from its current terminus down to a new road that Rancho Mission Viejo is building as part of these developments in Planning Area 1 and 2 that will be called Cow Camp Road. It's up a little bit north of the existing Ortega Highway. So Cow Camp Road is a significant arterial road that is currently being planned. The 241 toll road would be a significant road as well. And then as Planning Area 2 is being developed, Rancho Mission Viejo is starting now to figure out the arterials related to that. I've looked at one map that was a conceptual Planning Area 2, so I don't know all of those details. If you'd like, we could ask them.
Sure. I would appreciate that if there's any, awareness of what those would be.
Thank you. With regards to the circulation system in Rancho Mission Viejo, in essence, one could see and understand how that will work today. While the precise location of the arterials aren't known, it's been established sort of what type of arterials need to exist and how to connect those planning areas one after another. So in another presentation, we could easily demonstrate how that would work. The exception to the rule to a certain degree is that Planning Area 8 behind San Clemente, if you will, at the end of Pico, there are no roads that connect Planning Area 8 to the rest of the community.
Thank you. I personally would appreciate, and perhaps the rest of the board would appreciate, knowledge of that in the future.
Gotcha.
Thank you.
Tim, I have a question for you. I'm sorry, Joe.
No, go ahead. At the end.
Okay. We're talking about adding 20 acres of converting a cemetery, if you will. Obviously not utilized, but next to Tesoro. Tesoro is currently our our largest high school at around 3,000 students. You're talking about adding a capacity of somewhere between 800 and 900 additional students. Do we have any other schools in South Orange County that has a capacity close to 4,000 students?
No, we don't.
Is there any other comparable school in Orange County that you're aware of?
There are Santa Ana, as I recall, operates a school that is over 4,000 students right now, but that is if it was considered a single high school, that is something that actually would need to be reviewed by the state. If it is a usage where it's a separate school, the state looks at that differently. But of course, because of the topography, because of the ingress and egress of the traffic and the arterial roads there, those are significant issues that would need to be evaluated, I believe, with regard to the issue of how that would work if it was an option. We were just giving all of the various options that are there. That's simply one.
Okay, because it seems to me that's, I mean, a rather large school, a small university in some respects. I just wondering off the top of my head, is athletically, I mean, that school would dominate just given the population pool it could draw upon. But obviously there are bigger concerns than that. But in terms of the recommendation, though, here, I mean, we talk about the concept of a K-8 school in planning area 2. I mean, has any consideration been given to doing a K-5 and a 6 through 8? I mean, it seems to me that would cause significant concerns with respect to traffic. I mean, looking at Talega and how Vista Del Mar and how that was poorly managed.
You ask a question that I wish I had better answered earlier on, which is, why not a middle school? And the reason why not a middle school is the district's middle schools operate generally at a 1,200 student capacity. That, for planning purposes, that's generally what it is. We have some smaller, we have some larger, but that's kind of the planning standard. And there are not 1,200 6-8 students within this area. So if it were to be planned as a middle school option, if there were to be a plan for a middle school option, we would need, number one, a location that would be appropriate to take students from an existing middle school attendance boundary, either one of the ones up in Ladera Ranch or Marco Forster, most likely, and have those students attend that school. In addition to this, so as we looked at it, I agree with you, it's not an impossible concept, but it didn't seem to pencil out very well. The other one is the timing of building a middle school like that. In other words, we wouldn't get to the place of we couldn't fill it with all of these students to begin with from the middle school, so we would need to take them from our current ones. So the question is, how do you fund building a whole middle school that you don't really need until you're done with a development program that's going to take 20 years? So that's one of the reasons why the K-8 model that the district has had in place and had been discussed with previous staff seemed to be the best option here for addressing this level of need.
Well, given that we're putting off with respect to the high school, I'm wondering, I mean, some high schools I see go down 7 through 12. Have we even considered that as a possibility? I mean,
Those are all great questions with regard to the standard. You'll recall when I went through the standards,
right,
as the law, and then there was CUSD standards that don't exist. Right now, we've been operating in past practice, and certainly it's an appropriate place for the board to consider whether or not those types of school models make sense.
So it's something that staff has not evaluated at this time.
That's correct.
Okay.
Well, remember, this is the first report that we've done, and this topic is going to be on lots of future board agendas. This is very preliminary, and there will be changes, there will be variations, there will be modifications. We just wanted to begin the discussion, and you have a lot of important decisions to make, and the board is going to be the moving party on most of those decisions. Now, there's background information on why one may be preferable to another, but we have a ways to go yet, especially for those later phases and whatever happens with that high school. And let's be clear, we're not suggesting a massive high school of, 4,000 students. We were thinking that it would be some alternative version of a different high school. We also don't know what high school is really going to look like in a few years. I suspect it's going to change dramatically, as we're seeing with our online high school. So you have a lot of work ahead of you. This is just the beginning of it.
All right, thank you, Joe. Jim, your light's on.
Yeah, well, first a comment. I graduated from a high school with 4,500 students, and there were only three grades there. So it was a pretty interesting experience, and we did dominate
I graduated from a high school that only had 1,200, so I mean, I guess it would be a middle school standard here.
Yeah, if you want to win, get a lot of kids.
Yeah.
Okay. But while we have Mr. Kelly here, I thought maybe I'd like to ask a question of him. And this is kind of a big picture thing, but it does relate to what we're doing. It's about the ranch's vision of the governance of this area in the future. And it's a sort of two-part question. One is sort of how you all see that going, and whether that's annexation or incorporation, the long-term picture. The second part of it is about county inclusion in that planning area. We haven't seen any data about what kinds of county facilities are going to be built out there, what other kind of governmental infrastructure is going in.
With regards to the first question, the county changed its policy in looking at master plan community development from a governance perspective shortly after the county bankruptcy. The idea was that the county took essentially the position that it wanted to get itself out of the municipal services business as soon as reasonably possible. So with that in mind, they looked at unincorporated areas to either incorporate or be annexed in a logical fashion over time. When this plan was approved, it was with that policy in mind. And since that time, LAFCO, the Local Agency Formation Commission, has conducted a municipal services review. The upshot generally was that the neighboring jurisdictions really expressed little interest in expanding their boundaries to take in any of the new development. Hence, about two or perhaps 3 years ago, LAFCO designated Ladera Ranch and all of the remainder of Rancho Mission Viejo. I think the term of art was a community of emerging communities designation, which essentially said it isn't going to go into an existing city, but we recognize that there needs to be a governance plan in place over time to take the county out of the municipal services side of it. In all likelihood, it would be a graduated process, perhaps with the development of a community service area, community service district, so the entitlement process would roll through the county, and then gradually it sort of grows into what in all likelihood would be the last city in the county. With regard to public facilities, there haven't been any particular facilities, for example, courthouse or sheriff's facilities that have been designated for the project. Certainly the exception to that is fire stations. I think there are four stations or five stations planned for the project over time. In terms of a governance center or a civic center, the discussions that we have had is that the logical area for such a facility would probably be in Planning Area 3. It would be the largest, the densest part of the project, but that's quite a few years down the road.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Just to follow up on that, so you're saying that would be there would be one large city? Is that what you're anticipating?
I think the most likely outcome is that sooner or later, all of Rancho Mission Viejo would be a city, yes.
Including Planning Area 8, even though there's no connection?
Planning Area 8 is doubtful. Cortese-Knox and Hertzberg law, that a regulation that governs LAFCO, compels that LAFCO evaluate the logical annexation of a parcel based on service providers, circulation, school facilities, all of the things that go into making a community a logical extension. PA 8, in all likelihood, would be attached to San Clemente because it is centric, and you know you drive through it to get there. You know, logic would seem to indicate that that would be where it would want to go. Okay. Particularly given the earlier comment that there isn't a connection between Planning Area 8 and the rest of the project.
Right. Okay. Thank you, Jim. You have another question?
No more. Sorry. Thank you.
All right. All right, seeing no other questions, I guess we're done with this item. Any further comments for the superintendent? Okay, very good. Thank you very much. All right, well, since that was the only item for tonight, at this point I'll entertain a motion to adjourn. Motion by Bryson, is there a second?
Second.
Well, we all want to stick around? All right, motion to adjourn by Bryson, second by Reardon. All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? All right, we are adjourned by passing motion at 6-0. Thank you very much.